Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
I'm Jay Moran.
I'm Bridget Jaipal Valenza.
I'm Thomas O'Neill White.
We need to get together and let our voices be heard.
This is What's Next. A dedicated hour to have important conversations about the issues facing the marginalized and underrepresented communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario.
If we're going to have some real healing, we've got to have space to tell some uncomfortable truth.
What's Next continues our mission to discuss race,
equity,
and the common concerns of Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
And you are listening to What's Next. Thomas O'Neill White and Jay Moran here, and we're sitting with Merlin Hammer, the Senior Director of Public Health at the Neighborhood Health Center of Western New York. Merlin, thanks for being with us today.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
So we want to talk about health equity and health equity in Western New York. Can you talk a little bit about this push for national health in the National Health Center movement with the roots in social justice?
Yeah, so the National Health Center movement is one that is across the United States, so over 1,500 health centers across the United States providing care to individuals and families regardless of ability to pay. I think if we were to summarize the movement, is that healthcare is a right. It's not a privilege, and everyone deserves to have quality healthcare that's affordable and accessible to them and their families.
And so we talk a lot about health equity, but what does health inequity look like?
So health inequity, there are so many aspects to this. And I think what we're doing is also taking the broader definition of health, right?
Yes.
So that includes everything like housing, food, access to transportation.
The social determinants
income,
of health.
The social drivers, social determinants of health, absolutely. And in many cases, what ends up happening is that our systems are set up to not necessarily give everyone the same level of access to those resources. So you think of a family and their ability to access healthcare services, healthcare medical services. Are they located in an area that has a provider that is available? Are they located in an area that has transportation mm-hmm. that can take them to their appointment or that they can take to get to an appointment? Do they have funds or is their income enough to pay for a visit? Is it affordable care that they're having access to? And so health inequity can show up in a variety of ways, but in many instances, it's marginalized groups that suffer from health inequity.
When talking about the complexities of the healthcare system, I'm just curious about the neighborhood health centers in your six locations. Is it available to everybody? And I guess in some ways, I just know how, like I said, it's so complex that there might even be a simpler answer for access for everybody.
Yeah, and our tagline at Neighborhood is healthcare that welcomes you, right? Mm-hmm. So that you includes everyone, regardless of ability to pay, everyone, regardless of what your family story is, what your immigration status is. It's healthcare that welcomes you, someone who may be transitioning, who has a life story that is tough, who has gone through trauma. And so our services at Neighborhood really do welcome everyone.
How do you, just take us maybe briefly through, because I'm sure, again, it can get lengthy, but, somebody comes in for the first time, what are they going to experience?
Yeah, I think one of the first things that we love to kind of talk about is every single one of our offices is built in a way that it welcomes the individual, their story, and treats them with dignity. from the way that the buildings are built, the way that our exam rooms are kind of set up. It takes into consideration the safety, the trust, and the relationship building that we want to have with our patients. They go through a process of registering for their appointments and some of the technical aspects of seeing that provider, having their conversation, developing, building those relationships over time, and then the follow-up piece as well. We want to build long-term relationships with patients. That's primary care.
And I just want to touch, follow up on one thing. It sounds like there's a real intent or intention about making it a welcoming place. Can you maybe describe a couple of the nuances that make neighborhood health center different?
Yeah. So one of my favorite locations is actually our Matina location downtown. And so when you walk into that building, right, to be able to say, here's our pharmacy, here's our registration, the architectural detail of the building, I think, is one piece of that. But also, here are all of the services that you can access within the same building: dental, podiatry, behavioral health, nutrition, in addition to your adult medicine, pediatrics. So being able to have all of those services located in one place, and then having, you know, members of our team who can navigate you across those resources is how we help people feel welcome.
It's very much a one-stop spot.
Absolutely.
For medical needs. What challenges do you find within your job?
Ooh, that's a good one.
I'm glad we have an hour, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think healthcare is ever changing. I think some of the things that I noticed coming into the organization in 2014 and the things that I'm seeing now, how we do things, how society has shifted and changed, all impacts the way that we're able to deliver care. I think one of the most recent kind of really memorable ones for us all is the COVID pandemic, right? And being able to navigate through that. From that came some really great things like telehealth, being able to see your provider while you're not on site. That's amazing, being able to access that. Now, that is also kind of one of those places where we do see inequity and inequality, and that some people don't have that same access to those, that technology, to that electronic infrastructure or internet infrastructure, right, to be able to access those services. But everything's changing, and so being able to keep up with those changes definitely, I would say, presents a challenge.
Right? You've got 6 locations. Let's just go over them, because right inside of that, I think, is an interesting story.
Absolutely. So going kind of from north to south, that's the easiest to kind of remember it in my mind, is our northwest location that's located right on Lawn Avenue within the community center. That is one of our, actually our administrative building, but also the first neighborhood health center site, which again kind of stemmed from the community saying, hey, we need this resource. And the community also stepping up and saying, hey, here's how we provide care, pediatric care, obstetrics and gynecology care to our community. Further down south, next is our Riverways location that's located on 1569 Niagara Street. And that is one of our growing locations that also is including things like vision and psychiatry. So to be able to open that location, help to kind of offload some of the patient volume that we were seeing at our Northwest location and our Matina location, which is a little bit further south. Starting another location that, you know, patients in that community could access really easily, right on Forest Avenue and Niagara Street. We also on Niagara Street have 2 other locations: our Bridgeview location, which is our partnership with Best Self Behavioral Health, and that is providing primary care to some of their clients right on site. So again, that idea of integrated services that put the patient at the center and make it really accessible for them to get care. Our Matina location, again, we've talked about that one a little bit, but that's on 300 Niagara Street, right on the corner of Niagara and Carolina Street. Our Blaisdell location is another exciting location. We opened that in about 2018, and that is located on Lake Avenue, 4233 Lake Avenue. further south from that is then our neighborhood health center, South Towns, where it's primarily obstetrics and gynecology, but some behavioral health and nutrition services are also seen there. And then I can't forget the mobile unit, right?
So, oh, yeah.
Yes, so that is the unit that gets to travel all around, a little bit of everything there, but provide services out in the community. And that's another exciting site as well.
Now, how far does that mobile unit travel?
So the furthest I'm aware of is North Collins. So that's about, wow. Yeah. So North Collins, we started providing services in the top of January of this year in North Collins. That was another collaboration with Self Behavioral Health. And that was our trial at not only being able to provide COVID vaccines, COVID education, to really combat vaccine hesitancy and really instill vaccine confidence in the community, but also to say, hey, our rural folks need healthcare too, right?
No doubt.
And so being able to bring the unit out to where people live and make that accessible.
Would that be a next step, getting a neighborhood health center in those rural areas?
Well,
I know you have some people coming up from the South Towns and the Southern Tier to your Hamburg facility, but I mean, could you see another site further down south?
Well, I'll say anything's possible, right?
Don't want to speak for the executive director and the board of directors, right? What about you? Kind of touched on it a little bit about maybe vaccine hesitancy, and I'm wondering, is it, from what you understand, is it different than, say, maybe in, you know, North Buffalo, West Buffalo, as compared to maybe what you might see in a rural area like North Collins? Is that something that you're finding?
Absolutely. And I think there are a lot of reasons for that. And I think rural is kind of one subpopulation or community that we can talk about. I think our black and brown, so people of color, I think is another kind of population when we talk about vaccine confidence, right? And that ability to educate people and provide people with information and help have them ask the questions that they need to ask, get all the facts down on the table, right? And a lot of it is that relationship building, that trust building, and saying that a lot of times it's your primary care provider asking the question, have you considered getting this vaccine? That starts the conversation and then gets people thinking. As public health advocates, we want, you know, folks to understand that vaccination is important to not only ourselves as individuals, but also to our community. And it's important that we all have a good level of understanding so that we feel like we're making an empowered decision about that.
And back to it's fascinating to hear that you're in North Collins. I mean, you go from these places inside the city of Buffalo, but what about like welcoming, you know, the neighborhood health center, the mobile unit into North Collins? Are you seeing people, again, is there a, I don't want to use the word hesitancy, but maybe what is this compared to maybe
a curiosity?
What somebody might see. You know, if you live on, you know, on the west side, you probably see your locations, and you're a little more comfortable. Yeah. They might see you, you know, but now you're going into a community where you might not have had any presence before.
Yeah, and that brings it right back to that trust thing. And these are long term relationships that we have to start to build with community members. If we were, and I think we've seen this happen in history, right? People who show up with their cavalry, with their, here are all of the things that we can bring, the services that we can offer you, and don't take the time to kind of build those relationships, it doesn't necessarily have the same effect, mm-hmm. right, or the mm-hmm. same impact. And so a lot of our work right now is centered around, there are organizations that we're able to partner with and collaborate with to say, hey, we know we do this really well. We have the backing to show with it over 36 years of quality services that we provide as a neighborhood. But we also understand, like, this is a new community. And so, like, how do we partner together to make this happen?
I think off air, you mentioned trauma with patients. And I was watching this short PBS video on social determinants of health. And they talked a little bit about how racism and the trauma that is built from racism leads to poorer health outlooks among older African Americans. How do we counter this, or how can you counter this, you know, outside of like other people just stop being racist.
Well, there's a tough one too.
We might have a big
three-part
question.
Series coming
right.
up here.
Yeah, and in terms of, I think the health center movement, again, it really gets to the core of we are people. Everyone deserves healthcare. It is a right, and it's not a privilege. And so if we honor that and we take that approach with every single individual that comes into our health center, we can start to, I won't say heal the trauma necessarily
right.
all the way, right? But we can start to understand, here are all of the factors that are playing into some of these chronic diseases that we're also seeing show up more prevalently in African-American Black communities. Chronic hypertension, diabetes, obesity, and really understanding, and again, taking that cultural humility mindset mm-hmm. to try to be curious about what are the ways that we can partner with the patient so that they can make decisions about their own lives, so that they can lead their own healing. And that's a very individual process.
Yeah, I will certainly understand that. How do you see it? How does it show itself? Going back to that stress that we're seeing, especially on people of color. I mean, what do you see? Because you have a really interesting background when it comes to healthcare and some mm-hmm. of your other background as well before you got to the neighborhood health center. How do you see that showing itself?
Yeah, and I'll actually drill down to one of our kind of our quality goals as an organization. So one of the things that we recognize, and this is kind of bringing back the health inequity or health equity part of the conversation, is to say we know that hypertension is a huge issue in our community, right? Looking at hypertension, you have your percentage of, you know, people with hypertension in the community. It's looking deeper and saying, okay, but we're also seeing the disparity in saying non-white African Americans are experiencing hypertension or lack of control or non-control of hypertension, blood pressures in this case, mm-hmm. we're specifically talking about, at a higher rate than the rest of the population. And then saying, taking it again a step further to say, okay, so we have our clinical protocols from a primary care clinical standpoint. Here we have our clinical protocols, how we treat hypertension, how we address medications, how we address recommendations about lifestyle, education, things like that. But what do you do specifically for those non-white African-American individuals and families to start to see that shift? We know that hypertension then also leads to things like cardiovascular issues that are long-term over life. It's very closely linked to things like diabetes. Mm-hmm. And we can take the general blanket and say, hey, here are the things that we can offer. But then taking that additional lens, health equity is taking that additional lens and saying, what are the specific activities and actions that we can do to focus and provide the additional resources that some people may not have to help them get to those better health outcomes.
Individualizing the mm-hmm. healthcare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's go back then to individualizing healthcare. So a patient comes to the center for the first time. They're seeing a primary care physician mm-hmm. right off the bat. Is that how that works, or?
Yeah. So it could be a variety of okay. ways, right? So they can see a advanced practice practitioner as well. So we have MDs, so physician, NPs, PAs. So we have a very wide number of different specialties, and then also kind of levels of providers at one of our health center sites. They do set up a new patient appointment or wellness check where we kind of go through what's the history. What are some of the things that have happened in your family before? What are some of the things that you're looking to focus on? And then as far as what are some of your goals, really making it patient-centered, okay. which is kind of the focus of our care.
Is drawing out maybe part of the education process to a certain extent, but just maybe even drawing that out, like you say, what's your goals, you know? I'm not sure what I'd answer if I win it, quite frankly. But, you know, other than, you know, I want to be a healthy. But, yeah, I mean, yeah. Is there a part of that? Because, again, you're dealing with yeah. a wide array of the population here, from, you know, new immigrants to the city of Buffalo who may or may not speak English, you know, to people in rural areas like Southern Erie County.
Yeah. And the great thing about primary care is that you don't have to try to get all of that done in one visit, right? It's all about establishing that relationship with your provider so that they start to learn your story. Okay. And sometimes it happens over like the course of time. And then you can kind of continue and grow. I think one of the things that I'm always amazed at is looking at the generations of families that have trusted neighborhood with their care. So it's the child who grows up to the parent, and then they bring their children, right?
You're seeing that.
And you get to see that. And some of our provider team, you know, have been with the organization for upwards of 20 years and have been able to see grandchildren, right? So 3-4 generations of people trusting neighborhood with their care. And that's amazing.
And it's interesting you mentioned about some of your workers that have been there for 20 years. That flashed in my mind is some building a relationship, because I can only imagine with a lot of portions of healthcare, I mean, we hear about turnover and mm-hmm. things along those lines, you know, but at the neighborhood health centers, I mean, you're seeing, generally speaking, probably can't say, you know, for all cases, you know, relatively, you know, a stable group of people that people are seeing when they walk in the door.
I think neighborhood, like many other healthcare organizations, experiences very similar turnover.
Okay.
I think one of the strategies, though, that we do focus on and we highlight is hiring from our communities. And so, you know, being able to hire people that look like, who have experienced, that live in the communities where our patients kind of live, breathe, play, right, is also an important part of our mission and our healthcare delivery system, how we deliver care.
Can you talk a little bit about that outreach then, mm-hmm. to hire people from the neighborhood who are of the neighborhood?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I only get to see a little piece of it, right? But our human resources team, and right now I we know that nurses, providers, those clinical licensed professionals are definitely high need. And so being able to partner and collaborate with local schools, with local organizations who have connections, and many of our not only patient population, but also our employees, that they get to hear about us from word of mouth. So maintaining those great relationships, maintaining those community connections, being visible in the community are all part of that strategy.
The healthcare field is very stressful for those mm-hmm. frontline people. What kind of efforts does the neighborhood health center take to, or is there maybe a, like you said, you're going to these nursing schools. Is there a way maybe that you're trying to, the center tries to nuance itself to make it just a little more attractive for people, that there's something very special here that you might not get at maybe a hospital or a large practice or something like that?
Yeah, and I think for us, that is very much so rooted in our mission. I would say, and our mission is what drives and keeps people at neighborhood. I think another component of workforce and workforce development, which is what we're really talking about, it's a strategic priority for us. So, neighborhood creates its plan for, here's what we are hoping to do in the next, 3 to 4 years. And the people part is 1/4 of our strategic plan. Hmm. How our workforce is able to live and breathe. What are some of the interventions that we're doing to keep people? That's 1/4, 25% of our strategic plan. And so it has raised to that strategic priority, because we know that is what then impacts our ability to focus on health equity.
Mm-hmm. Can I be so bold as to ask you what other facets of the strategic plan you can talk about?
Mm. Yeah. So when we talk about our strategic plan, we're really talking about the care of patients, right? The care of patients, their outcomes, and how we're able to sustain our work over time. In addition to that, people please, right? We're not able to do any of this work without our workforce. But how we deliver care, what services we provide, are all parts of that. How we measure the quality care that we say that we provide. and how we represent that and communicate that, not only to the patients that we serve, but to community and stakeholders, right? A neighborhood has had a history of getting grants and having support and funders in the community because we're able to deliver. And I think 35 years of that delivery, you know, we got to keep going and keep pushing the envelope a little bit too.
How do you measure successful outcomes? And then you know, sharing that with stakeholders, community leaders, and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Well, organizationally, so within the organization, we have a series of what we'll call quality metrics. So here are the things that we consider are really important for us to look at. And some of that is given to us from the federal government, mm-hmm. but we also want to ensure that we're meeting those New York State and the federal thresholds for some of that as well. And so smoking rates, hypertension and diabetes, which we've talked about before, childhood immunizations, those are all important components of the individual care of patients that we look at a population level as well to say, how are we doing and how are we going to continue to meet those? What are the strategies that we have to put in place if we need to improve? And in a lot of our qualities, I mean, neighborhood was in the top 20% of healthcare centers in New York State last year in quality metrics. So we've had a history of that, and I think that is part of what drives us to continue.
Our guest is Merlin Hammer. She is the Director of Public Health at Neighborhood Health Centers here in Buffalo. We're going to take a time out, come back with more. This is What's Next on WBFO.
Did you know that WNED PBS is always working on great new local shows for you to watch? Documentaries like Kleinhand's Gift to Buffalo, which tells the story of Buffalo's Music Hall.
The hall is very intimate, and that intimacy makes everyone who comes in here feel a part of our family.
Fun and educational series like Compact Science.
Believe it or not, peppers are technically fruits.
And Shakespeare's greatest hits featuring some of his best-known soliloquies and monologues.
We are such stuff as dreams are made of.
You can watch them all on our website at wned.org/local shows. While you're there, check out the show pages and mini websites for additional content such as bonus features, photo galleries, and lesson plans. Find it all at wned.org/local shows.
Explore the Underground Railroad's final stop. Learn about how the Latine workforce organized to overcome discrimination and follow the timeline of immigration in Western New York.
So remember, history surrounds you and includes you.
Watch Compact History on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
And welcome back to What's Next. We are talking with Merlin Hammer. She is the Director of Public Health at Neighborhood Health Center. And I'm Jay Moran, along with Thomas O'Neill White.
And Marilyn, I want to just circle back real quick on, you know, do metrics change? You mentioned how things change a lot within the healthcare system. And I wanted to ask you just, do the metrics change with outcomes? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I would say that it's mainly our way of prioritizing the strategies that we start to implement that really change over time. The metrics themselves, we know that being able to control your blood pressure, being able to understand where your A1C is, so like your 3-month average of how well you're managing things like diabetes, your immunization status. We know that those are the things that contribute to better health outcomes and better health for our community. But sometimes those numbers go up and down based mm-hmm. off of a lot of factors. And so being able to keep an eye on where they are, right? And then being able to change what we prioritize based off of the need of the community is part of our strategy.
Just getting back to like funders, that's an interesting part of this, of course. And, you know, healthcare, of course, you know, the finances of healthcare are, again, complex. I think I'll keep on using that term throughout this conversation, right? But what about that? How does that model work as best you can describe it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would say our revenue is patient is a combination of that patient revenue. It's the it's also in quality incentive. So being able to reinvest in the programs and the services that we offer. Four of our major sites also have pharmacies located on site. And so those pharmacies, along with our 340B program, allows us to then again reinvest some of those savings into the services that we're able to provide. And even some of our roles, a community health worker and care coordinator, some of the roles that help folks to navigate our health system really come from that combination. Plus, there's a lot more detail.
Sure,
of
but just to be clear, so if somebody comes in, they don't have insurance, they're not going to be turned away.
They're not going to be turned away. And right then and there, we have, you know, they get in contact with our billing team. We have something called a sliding fee discount program, which based off of two things, family size, household income, you may qualify for any variety of five, I think, sliding fee different scales. It could be as low as $3 for a visit.
$3 for a visit. Okay. Well, that's so there's some really in that case. When it comes to finances, there's no blockade there in any way, right?
And even if that person, comes in if that cost is a barrier to pay, we'll make sure that we kind of work through that with the individual right then and there.
Excellent. Talking with Merlin Hammer, Director of Public Health here at the Neighborhood Health Center. Your background's really interesting. When you were over at UB, did some things on global health initiatives. And since you've become the Director of Public Health at the Neighborhood Health Center, you've also went and got your RN. That is, tell me, how is your perspective built on, or how has it maybe grown or expanded as you've gone through all these different experiences? I'm really curious about that.
Yeah, I think I have a deeper appreciation for that relationship between that operations side, the administrative, here's the data, here's the structure, here's the logistics, right, that we work through as a health center, but then also what happens in that exam room, those relationships with the patients, the understanding of how health education happens, and then what are all of the levels and layers that kind of factor into someone understanding what a doctor or a provider is telling them in that exam room. And so I've gotten a new appreciation for some of that. I had a dream one day, a long time ago of going to med school, but I think being a nurse showed me compassion. It brought out trust, that relationship of trust for me and with patients. And it's been a good journey.
As you went through, we talked about humility before, but as you went through that journey of learning about of getting your RN, maybe is that something that you picked up? Maybe can kind of describe maybe how that feeling, maybe an experience that brought that home to you?
Yeah, and often they talk about nurses as if like nurses is a calling, not necessarily something that you just hop into, right? Just because you want to. But I've also always had that affinity for individual relationships with people. And so in my role, I'm able to kind of do a very interesting blend of the two of those and really look at the population health stats and look at what are some of the strategies and interventions that we can do from a programmatic standpoint, but then also have those really great relationships with patients who, you know, are calling me to talk about their new medication and how that's, you know, reacting with their body or, asking a question about whether or not they should be taking XYZ medication with another or what kind of questions that they want to ask their provider at their next visit. So I got to get a good blend of the two.
Anecdotally, can you talk about people ending up at Neighborhood after exhausting different avenues for proper healthcare? Is there anything like a story you can point to that kind of like promotes what Neighborhood healthcare does?
Absolutely. Oh, there's so many of them. The one that comes to mind is actually something in just from my perspective, right? A connection that we have in the community, a partnership, informal partnership, right? That we have in the community, but someone new to the Buffalo, new to Erie County, wasn't aware of kind of all of the systems or healthcare providers that were in town. And so I got a call from a community health worker saying, hey, I have this patient and this family, and here's what they're experiencing. There was a health-related story and scare with that, and they need to establish care, really important. And we were able to get them in for an appointment pretty quickly, right? So an appointment that met their need as a family, that was at a time that was accessible to them, got them transportation to that appointment as well, and linked them up with the provider who might best understand their background and their story. Those are always great connections to make on an individual level. But I think our team and our system is able to do that kind of in a larger scale as well.
And when it comes to, I'm curious also about the individual as compared to maybe the family that comes in. What are you seeing? I guess I'm more just kind of curious about the concerns that people are bringing to the center that you're looking to address. I mean, obviously you have a lot of big issues that you're trying to address here, but you know, I'm wondering, you know, how that kind of shows itself as people come in for the first time or come in for multiple times for that matter.
Yeah, I think with that, primary care is about those long-term relationships. And so being able to initiate that relationship is kind of hard and tricky.
Sure.
And so navigating that process, I think, is kind of that step one that sometimes folks have a challenge with, right? So knowing the right provider, having someone who's going to listen to me, care about me, who's not going to disparage my story or whatever priorities I have for my life. So that I think is a barrier from the individual to family kind of scope. And then also thinking through what are the services or other connections and resources that you can provide, because healthcare is more than just that medical care that you get in the exam room, the medications, the history, the height and weight, the physical form that we sign off and we allow, you know, we give to you to give back to your job. It's also considering those social drivers that we talked about earlier. What are some of the barriers that you're experiencing getting to appointments, finding housing, your housing conditions that might be impacting your care, but that you may never have been asked a question about before, and kind of combining all of that together, looking at that whole person holistically, right, and considering their story.
And this flashed my mind when you talked about the household. I apologize for putting you on the spot here a little bit, but is the center seeing any is lead poison or lead? Presence of lead is still very prevalent in housing and the old housing stock in Buffalo. Is that something that's showing itself as well, or is that maybe something that you don't necessarily have information on?
Yeah, I don't have any specific stats about it, but I do know that and some of our rural partners have also kind of brought it up as a concern, that it definitely is still a concern within the city and then on the outskirts of the city as well. So being able to be educated, right? So having those preventive visits with your pediatrician to talk about it, to test it. One of the things that we're able to do is do that testing right on site before you leave the appointment, right, for that lead. And get that information right away, as opposed to some other systems that might make you go to the doctor and then go to a lab, right?
Right.
So being able to get that done right on site is so key and so important for the development of our 0 to 5 and under kiddos.
What about partnerships with other organizations? And I ask because we've had a couple anti-smoking groups on, and you know, they're always out there, you know, they hit the streets with their agendas. Now does Neighborhood Health, do they at all do any partnerships like that, just promoting anti-smoking and you know, getting menthol cigarettes eliminated from local stores?
Yeah, I think the great thing about like the health equity work is that so many of our missions and our visions kind of like feed into the same thing, right? Mm-hmm. So that idea of partnership is so crucial to seeing that improvement. And I think what we're able to do from a health center, a primary care side, is ask that those some of those same questions during that visit and appointment, and really have those individual conversations with those patients to say, hey, you know that your vape mate, you know that, you know, let's talk about that. Right. Let's understand kind of like what's playing into that for you. Where are you in that stage of readiness to change? Because not everyone's there yet, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think in partnership, in collaboration with those other organizations that are kind of doing the on-the-ground work for advocacy, you know, we're able to collaborate with some of them really closely, either on site or at some of our events. But we're helping to support that work in other ways as well.
And Thomas used the term these groups that go to the streets. They get on the streets and try to mm-hmm. try to get their message out. You mentioned earlier, of course, how word of mouth is a big part of the patient profile. But what about the community, about the neighborhood health center? I mean, is there an active outreach process going on?
Absolutely. And so our mobile unit is kind of a great first example, right? So you're out in the community, you have this 38-foot-long mobile unit with two exam rooms that you're kind of bringing around the neighborhood, and people are asking questions. Oh, what do you do? Like, what kind of services do you provide? And for some people, we're going to give you care right on the unit, but some people, that's an introduction to neighborhood as an organization, right? And over the past few years, like neighborhood being involved in things like the Juneteenth parade, the Pride parade. We've done community events with local organizations to really just provide information about our services. And sometimes it's those questions. Then you find out, oh, hey, you're actually a neighborhood patient. Oh, when's the last time you had your visit? 3 years ago. Okay, let's go ahead and get you scheduled for an appointment, right? Let's go ahead and schedule that appointment, that follow-up with your provider.
Let's take one more time out, and we'll be back to finish up our conversation with Merlin Hammer. She is the Director of Public Health at Neighborhood Health Center. This is What's Next on WBFO.
Hey people, Corey here with Compaq Civics. I got a question. Do y'all know salamanders? No, not the cute little ones. I'm talking about the monstrous, mythological salamander from antiquity. I know you're probably wondering what this has to do with civics, but bear with me. In 1812, Massachusetts Governor Elbridge Gerry and his party, the Democratic Republicans, hated the other party, the Federalists. Gerry and his homies cooked up a scheme to secure power for themselves. You see, back then, voting districts were determined by the boundaries of a county. But Gerry and his buddies took advantage of a loophole that gave them the power to draw up new district lines in the favor of their party. The Federalists mocked the most egregious district by illustrating it as a monstrous salamander and tossed Gerry's name on it. And thus, gerrymandering was born. This practice became wildly popular throughout history. It's used by both modern U.S. parties and politicians abroad. It undermines voter power and impedes democracy by cherry-picking voters for a desired outcome. Thankfully, it was challenged in 2023 in New York State, and lines had to be redrawn. Check it out. I've got a jet, but in another episode, we'll talk about how gerrymandering makes representation unfair and directly impacts you.
Special thanks to our partners, the Buffalo Presidential Center, whose mission is to explore and share stories about Buffalo and Western New York's contributions to the U.S. presidency and national affairs.
Hi, I'm Christina. I love exploring the world around me, and I have behind-the-scenes VIP tickets to some of the most exciting places and people in Western New York, and you can come along with me from wherever you are. Let's go! A new series you can watch on WNED PBS, the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel, and on PBS Learning Media nationwide.
So let's go, let's go, let's go, let's go, let's go.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
And welcome back to What's Next. We're talking with Merlin Hammer. She's Director of Public Health at Neighborhood Health Center. I'm Jay Moran, along with Thomas O'Neill White.
And Marilyn, I want to ask you about this Healthcare for the Homeless program began in 2011. Talk a little bit about that and its specific services.
Yeah, so one of the lines of our federal grant is to provide additional services to anyone who may be experiencing homelessness. And part of that, is, and or actually the, if we define homelessness in the context of our grant, it's anyone who is unhoused, street shelter homeless, who may be living in permanent or supportive housing. And so it's a pretty expansive definition, really including anyone in one of those situations or who is at risk of experiencing that.
Mm-hmm.
Part of those additional services are things like a advanced care management. And so for higher risk individuals with higher risk medical needs, we're able to really focus and have those individual conversations about here are some of the health practices, here are some of the ways that we can reconnect you to services within the health center.
And we were talking about the services earlier. Dental services, is that something part of the center as well?
Dental is also part of our centers. One of the great things that we were able to do at our downtown Matina site is to expand our dental services there. And so we started off with 3 exam rooms. And then last summer, we were able to expand that to about 8. So more than doubling that access in the community.
Wow. I would have to think that that's a busy place.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it really is kind of one of those, as much as you know, we go through life, but dental care is a real major part of overall healthcare, right?
Yeah, and can be really expensive, and mm-hmm. so that's why when we say regardless of ability to pay, it's so important to kind of like keep bringing up our sliding fee discount program, and that is one of the services that we're able to provide on a discount as well: dental, our medical care, pharmacy services, behavioral health, nutrition, really the whole gamut of services, and make that more affordable for folks.
And, well, mental health services, again, that's, I know you do some work with or have a partnership with Best Self. Are we finding, and it does seem, but a lot of the conversations we've had on this program for the last couple of years, there is a growing appreciation and understanding and maybe even a reaching out from people for mental health services. Is that something mm-hmm. that you're finding as well?
Absolutely. And I would say that our behavioral health team, I don't have the exact numbers, but has increased incredibly to meet that need.
Hmm.
So much so that we've, because of some of that increased need, added psychiatry, and that blend of psychiatry, behavioral health, along with that primary care is going to be so key to that integrated view of you have a provider who can partner with your provider to give you the best outcomes there.
Talk a little bit about just where you see neighborhood health center in 3 years, in 5 years, in 10 years.
Hmm.
With all the things that you do, you just keep expanding?
I think that's an interesting question. I think if I were to narrow it down, 3 years, I'm just going to keep us to 3 years, right? Health equity is going to continue to be at that center. And I think as we continue to evolve, as we continue to see that society changes, policies change, funding sources and kind of a lot of that changes, we'll continue to adjust with that and really listen to the community. I think one of the efforts that we've had as an organization is to kind of open up and listen to the patient voice and incorporate that into a lot of like the future planning of the organization. And so we will see that show up at least in the next 3 years, and we'll see what happens after that.
You know, Thomas brought it up at the beginning, and I know there was a conversation a little bit about it, but how about for you, for somebody who now is kind of has this kind of wide look at healthcare when it comes to the community health center model? You know, Thomas said, like, called it a movement at the height of the program. I mean, do you see, it's a two-part question. Do you see it growing? And then I guess maybe your elevator pitch, for lack of a better term, about why you think this might be the model And maybe that's not the best model overall, but maybe actually it is. Maybe this would be the model mm-hmm. for a healthcare system in this country that, despite the fact that it spends more money on healthcare than any other nation in the world, still continues to have relatively poor outcomes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I think health centers, I think number one, we believe that health center health care is a right. And so keeping that at the center of all that we do, I think is key. Primary care is about relationships. And so health centers are really in a great position to be able to build those relationships. And what we've done is show that quality over time. This doesn't happen without partnership, right? So health centers able to partner with a community-based organizations is going to be so key in the future as we continue to grow and as more health centers do this work.
You could see it popping up not only in cities, but suburbs, rural areas. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. That's encouraging. I think. Yeah, you seem pretty happy about it. We're talking with Merlin Hammer here, Director of Public Health at Neighborhood Health Center here in Buffalo.
Jay, that was a very good question, and I'm finding it hard to follow up.
I'm curious about that, though, just the idea that, you know, I don't think anybody would say that the healthcare system overall right now in the United States is a system that is working at its capacity, mm-hmm. not even close, I would have to
working,
say.
Working for the people,
right?
I would say.
And then you take underprivileged people, people who are underserved, and, you know, I guess I'm saying, I'm just kind of wondering if you can advocate on that idea that this could be a better way of being in these locations rather than, you know, I want to start criticizing the hospital system or anything like that, but large-scale hospitals that have become centers where revenue and income have to go rolling through. But is it really providing the best overall health outcomes for everybody?
Yeah, and I would say health centers, and I'm still growing in my learning of advocacy, right, around health center work and care, but health centers have had a history of having bipartisan support, right, for the movement, and it's just because of that, right? We provide care that is quality, that we're able to show the outcomes for, that we're able to care for millions of people across the United States, and continuing to do that is part of our work, right? And so not seeing it any other way, but continuing to show those numbers and provide that value to our community and patients.
You talked, you mentioned cultural humility. Can you get a little bit more into that, because I know off air, I asked you a question about, you know, cultural competency and, you know, as an example, addressing language barriers with patients and so forth. But you would call it cultural humility.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Yeah. And I'll kind of like a step back to and talk about cultural competence.
Yes, please.
I think they're both important. Cultural competence is really that set of beliefs, those things that we believe, that we know about people, their culture, what they bring to the table and their stories, their experiences. I think one of the things about cultural competence, though, is it says that I know these things. This is a set of knowledge that I have. Cultural humility really moves it into a process, right? And saying, I am going to be curious about my own culture. I'm going to evaluate what are the aspects of my culture that I bring to the table, the aspects of my experience that factor into the way that I deliver care as a healthcare professional, the way that I talk to patients, how I understand time, how I understand health, death, the importance of some of those key aspects of our lives. The second aspect, and this is a concept that actually comes from two researchers, so not my own, but the second aspect of that is like sharing power with the people around us, right? So empowering patients to be the experts of their lives, and really taking or shifting away from that power over where I know there's the discrimination, the racism, the segregation that happens, and saying, I don't know, and here, please let me know, teach me. And so sharing the power with the people in our community. And then the third aspect of that is really creating partnership. And that could be creating partnership with the individuals that come to us for care, but also with other organizations maybe that know more about the topic, and staying curious, right? That active listening, that trust building, those are the components of creating partnership with other people around us. And if you continue that process throughout life, what you realize is I'm not the expert. And I'm okay with not being the expert. And when we apply that to healthcare, it also says, this is gonna be a journey. We're gonna learn from each other together, and let's continue partnering, putting the patient at the center of that care.
And to that point, within that process, one probably confronts their own personal biases.
Mm-hmm. You have to start to question, why is it that I believe that this is better than something else? Why is it that I am maintaining this belief about this is what good health looks like, that this is what I should be eating, right? And starting to question and challenge those norms, quote unquote, that happen.
Well, this has been a great conversation with Merlin Hammer, Director of Public Health at Neighborhood Health Center. Thank you so very much for...
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. This has been What's Next on WBFO.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.